accession with 32677, Real 5.
So the British were going to send you up some food?
Yes, but we never got it, I'm afraid.
So, did the tanks arrive?
Oh yes, the tanks came through the village. And troops and lorries, and the Germans were still retreating. It was a pantomime. It was really a pantomime.
So did they take the Germans prisoner, or did they just let them go on?
No, just let them go on. Yes, oh yes. I don't know where they were heading for, but yes, they just let them go on. They didn't stop for nothing. They just went straight for it. And they could see all the sheets, all the white sheets hanging down from the people's houses, the bedroom windows, you know.
I suppose they wanted to get as much territory as possible before
the
Russians
didn't stop for nothing. Didn't stop for nothing. Yes.
So what happened to you then? Did you stay there?
Oh, yes, we still stayed there. And so this South African, he could speak fluent German. All right? He could speak fluent German, and he said, do you fancy going out, he said, and see what we can pinch, you know. Oh, I said, you're not going to get anything. He said, well, it took all hours, just going to see what we get there. So I said, all right. So we went out, you know, and went walking along the lane, and we met some Germans. Like, we stopped them and we searched them. Nothing worth pinching. So we went on again and
so the Germans, in effect, had actually surrendered by this time.
Oh, yeah, retreated, yeah.
So was it that it was after Hitler had committed suicide and they were all marching back and it was really a thing about territory. So the war in effect had ended.
But then it actually ended, but the war was still on then.
Yes.
Still on. And then we went on and searched the more Germans, and I managed to get that badge, belonged to an officer, high ranking officer. So he said, let's get in this farm here. So we walked in this farm, and as we walked through, it was very quiet, and I could see some hens running around. So I thought to myself, I'll put two and two together here, and I thought, I wonder if I can find any eggs. So I didn't have to look very far, and I found a couple of eggs, and I thought, I'll have they later. How I was going to cook them, how I was going to eat them, I really don't know, but the sight of seeing these two eggs, I thought myself, right, so I put one in each pocket. And as we were going through the village, there was this farmer, he'd come out, and he could speak a bit of English, German. So he told him we were English, and he said, yeah. And this South African, he could speak pretty good German. And he told us to go in, and we went into his house, and we went into his dining hall. I remember sat there. And he had all these old fashioned pictures all hanging on the wall. Very old fashioned it was, you know. So he said, sit down, you know. He said, you like some breakfast? And the South African said, yes, he's going to give us some breakfast. God, I know myself, you know. So he said, sit down and sit at the table. And then we sat down and his daughter come in. Oh, God, I know myself. I didn't fancy walking out with that. Didn't fancy walking about. She wasn't nice looking or nothing, you know. It didn't turn me nothing. It didn't turn me anything, you know. So she put the plate in front of us, you know, fried eggs, bacon. Oh, God, they told me so. So we tucked into that, you know, bread, white bread. Oh. And brought some coffee and sat drinking the coffee. And when he finished, he asked us to write a letter so that he could give to the Russians, to say that we were well treated, and we could say on there, don't do any harm to this farmer, as he is well treated English. So the South African wrote something on a bit of paper, I don't know. So I thought myself, right, going now? He said, yeah, all right. So we picked ourselves up from the dining room, went out, and we started walking around. Oh my God, I know myself, these two eggs, what's happening? And the eggs were running all down my legs. I forgot the eggs. So when I went to sit down to have my breakfast, they cracked. So I had a great sign, made sure nobody was around, pulled me turned us down, and got some grass and wiped all the egg off my legs then.
I never got to meet Eggs, did I? So then we went on, and as we were going through the farm, there was a load of Russians, and they were ransacking the place left, right and centre, and they called us, come in, come in, come in, they said. And we went in, and they was pinching this and pinching that. He said, well, help yourself, you have something, you know. And I thought, well, what the hell can we do with it? We can't take anything. And I said, no. So there was prisoners, you see, working on this farm, you see. So we said, no. And so we went out, and as we were going through the barn, I happened to see a German. And I thought myself, hello, what's going on there? So we stopped, and there was this barn, and we went in, there was about half a dozen Germans in there, sitting down. And they were rather surprised to see us come in, because, I mean, all we had on was just an RAF uniform, that was all. Just a pair of trousers and a tunic, that was all we had. No cap or nothing to distinguish if that were RAF, you know, it could have been anybody. So, they said, rugs, and they cut off. Didn't know where to do, what to do. So, said, well, get him up. And they couldn't get him up because he was badly injured. So then he said, have you got any guns? And he said, yeah. So he went in, and he brought out a Luger. Oh, I said, I love that one, I thought myself. So he gave me the Luger, no ammunition, and I stuck this gun like a cowboy, heavy trees. So I could pop my hand up, wave it around, you know. So we managed to get him up, and they managed to get him going horse and cart and taken. So then we headed back to our diggings where we were, and when we got back in the morning, wagon drew up with some food, and the man wanted bread. He said, no, you don't get no bread, can't give you bread. God, we want bread, white bread. No, he said, you can't have it, they won't give us any white bread because it would fill us up, you see, kill us, you see. So they had to be very careful what they give us. But in the meantime, we stayed there another day, because they had enough food, and they said, we'll get transport to come and pick you up. So then they brought transport along, and we all went in a transport, and they took us then to Lübeck.
How many people do you think died on the route from the prisoner of war camp to that point?
No idea. They were stretched out. I think it was about 60 killed in that friendly fire.
Well, how long a walk was it?
Oh, days. Days walking. Days and nights. Yeah. Well, the Germans didn't know where to take us.
No.
So once they got us out of the Russian sector, that's all they were worried about. And as I say, the men were leaving. They were running off, you know. I mean, nothing to stop you. And they warned us. They said, well, you know, you stick together. Because if you stick together, you've got a better chance of surviving. But if you do go off, you know, you're not going to guarantee that you're going to go through it, pull through it. So we decided to stick together.
So you actually got to prevent?
Yeah. And we got the loop back then, and they then put us on an aircraft, Dakota, and they flew us home.
That must have seemed very surreal.
Oh, yes.
Where did you land?
Cosford in Kent, yeah. Okay. And when we landed, there was a sign out there, welcome home, welcome. And all the WAFs, they were out there helping us off the plane, because God knows what they looked like, you know. Must have looked like tramps, with our hair and beard and thin and God knows what. So I don't think my mother would have recognized me. But there they are, so then they flew us home.
First bath was a wonderful experience, wasn't it?
Oh yes. I always remember in Cosford they were coming around the telephone, and they said, do you want anybody to come to see you? I said, no, I don't want anybody to come.
why not? I don't want to see a man I stayed like I'm in, I said. I said, I doubt they'll recognize me. So they said, all we've got to do is get on the phone and we tell them. You know, they'll see, they'll get here, all right? I said, no. I said, I don't want anybody. I said, I don't want nobody to come and see me. I said, I'll see them, I said, when I get out. So then after being in hospital, I was suffering from malnutrition and gastritis. And they didn't know what to do with us on the camp. They just did not know what to do with us. And every time we went out, they said, hey, you behave yourselves. And they wouldn't put us on the playground. That's the last thing they do, put you on the playground and make you march, you know, if we hadn't gone through enough, you know. So then the commandant said, well, he said, I don't know what to do. He said, if you like, he said, get some paintbrushes, he says, and do the cinema. So we're in there doing the paint in the cinema, you know. And the chaps are saying, well, when can us go home? I said, no, I just don't want to stay here. I just want to go home. He said, you just can't go home. You got to wait, you know. So when we used to go into the hospital itself, you know, they used to warn us. Didn't want any trouble in the camp or anything, you know. And I was still with the RAF officers, and I was only in rank, just so. And I used to go with them, you know. I remember once we went into, I don't suppose you call it a nightclub then, it was like a place where they were dancing at. And I went to walk in, and a sergeant, red cap, stopped me. He said, hey, he said, you can't go in there. He said, you're not an officer. I said, I know. I said, I'm with him. He said, no. And the officers turned around and they just called me Darkie. He said, wasn't it Darkie? Oh, I said, they wouldn't let me in. Wouldn't let you in, he says. Rubbish, in you come, he said. And he just took me in, you know. Because they all had their uniforms on, you see. And with the stripes and some of the pips up and what have you. So, yeah, so then eventually they sent round somebody and said, do you want to sign on? Do you want to sign on? And I said, no, I don't want to sign on. I know I've had enough.
So when was this, by the time you got out of hospital? Was the war finished by then?
Oh, no, war was still on.
Still on, yeah.
Yeah, Japanese war was still on.
But
so,
D-Day
you had to come.
Yeah.
As we were there.
D-Day.
VE Day. That's it, yeah. And then...
did you have great celebrations on VE Day?
I went to London. And I always wanted to see Big Ben. I'd never seen Big Ben before. The first thing I wanted to see was Big Ben. So I went there. And a lot of celebrations going on, you know. But we didn't celebrate for some reason or other. So... I don't know what we went through, you know.
Subdued,
I should say. We just wanted to be, just look on and left, you know. And it was too late to go home, so a lot of them slept in. And I always remember, years and years ago, they used to have windows, and the windows used to go in like an upper round. And if you went to touch the window, there was no window, but the window was in further. Mm. But between here and there, there was a gap. There was a gap between the window. And I slept in there.
And did you manage to get that wonderful meal that you were looking forward to?
No. So when I eventually, I said, no, I said, I've had enough. I don't want to. I've seen all what I want to see. I said, with the forces. So they said, all right. So then they gave me a pass to go on the train from Cosford to Exeter. And we just jumped on the train. There was another fellow with me, I don't know who he was, but we sat in the carriage like, and we headed for home. Well, in the meantime, you know, while I was in hospital, this nurse was so impatient with me. She said, oh, what have you been through? She said, give him a ring. I said, I don't know the number. You don't know the number? She said, will you tell me where they live? And I said, they live in Exeter. Well, we're in Exeter. Oh, I said, they live in Bonnie Road. I say, what do you do? I said, we've got a taxi business. What are they called? And Mrs. Bailey. Right. So they rang up. And they said, hey. He says, somebody on the phone wants to speak to you. That's just my sister. Gosh, he said, where are you? I said, I'm home. I said, in Cosford, oh, we'll come up now. No, no, I said, no, I don't want nobody up here. I don't want nobody up. I said, I'll call in when I come home. When will that be? You know? Do your mother know? Oh, no. I said, you're the first person to know. I said, I'm home. You know, so...
She knew you were a prisoner of war, obviously.
Oh, yeah. Yes. I was missing for a while. I got a telegram, missing. And they said to me, mother, that your son's missing, presumed dead. Because I was up in the mountains, you see, they had no idea where I was, you see. And so, and then being on the truck, you see, driving us up for you. So, you know, it was a mighty long time. But when I eventually got home, I went to my sister because she can recognize me first, you know. Of course, she said, you lost a lot of weight. So she said, did Mum know you? I said, no, she don't. Well, she said, we'll drive you out. So we got the car and she drove me home. And when I got there, there was nobody home. There was a notice outside the door, welcome home. And all the streets had all the flags up the street and all the flags flying. And somebody saw me and knew my mother. And she went across the road. She said, hey, she says, who do you think's home? I don't know. She said, Stan, she said, do you know? Yes, he is. She said, you better go. And she come over, you know. And that was my celebration. Yes. Yes.
And all your brothers got back all right?
Yes, except one. He was in the Navy, got badly injured. And he had a problem with oil. He got caught in oil, you know. And from the time he was demobbed, he had skin complaint, and he had to tie his hands to the bed to stop him from scratching because he used to scratch himself in the wall, you know. But he was never in good health after that. But yes, all my brothers, all got me back over. I mean, other brother, one in the airborne division, he fought in Korea. You know, he fought in Korea, but he never tell him much about it. No. I've often sat down like and asked him, you know, about life in Korea. Now he's not a talkative person, maybe. But there we are. So.
So did you settle back in the city street, all right?
Yes. Oh, yes, yes. I've seen more me girl then, you see. Yeah, I wasn't married then, you see. Yes. 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 It just shows you how times have changed. When I was home, her father, a very strict man, he was very strict. But he's written more about like that today. And I was stood outside their gate. And it was just about 9:15, I suppose, at night. And he happened to come through the gate. And he said to his daughter, have you got any home, Goldie? Oh, she reared him. She said, he's 22-year-old, he says. And he's been away for over 4 years, she says. And you tell me, she said, thank for that he got no home to go to. You know, so he apologized in the end. But I say he was very strict, you know. Yes.
So you got married soon after?
Oh, yes, yeah, white wedding. Married me uniform.
Lovely.
And my demob suit that I had was blue. And the fellow wanted to get married, so I had to lend him his suit. He got married to me. See, he's still about there. He walks along here sometimes with his dog. And we often talk about my suit. You know, he got married in it. Yes. Yes.
So you got employment easily enough and you got married? No,
I didn't. I had about 108 days leave. And I got so fed up that I went looking for work. I tried the fire service. I tried the prison service. Everywhere I looked. But then I managed to get a job on the railway. So I worked on the railway for 7 years. And I was in charge of a group of people. And then I left there and I went to school. I looked after a school. And I spent 35 years there. 35 years at the school. And I taught children how to play football, cricket, badminton, volleyball. All the games, always playing with them, always out playing cricket. And it doesn't matter where I go today, banks, post offices, old people's homes, hospitals, shops. Somebody knows me.
How nice.
Yeah, they stopped me in the street and they said, "Oh, Mr. Hooper. Mr. Hooper," they said.
"God, nice.
Long time ago since I saw you. Who are you? God, you look young." He says, "You know, you haven't changed a bit. You haven't changed a bit." But I used to play with all the children. All the children respected me. There wasn't one child in the 35 years I said I was at that school that I had a problem with. They always used to say, "Sir," or "Mr." Lady come to me one day in the playground, she said, "Mr. Hooper." I said, "Yes." She said, "My son came home," and I said, "Well, what have you been doing today then?" "Oh," he says, "I've been playing rounders with Sir." She said, "Sir, who's Sir? Who's Sir?" Well, he said, "The man who looks after the school." "Sir, he ain't a Sir." So she came to me, she said, "Why is my son going to call you Sir?" I said, "Your son isn't going to call me Sir." I said, "When he do call me Sir," I said, "I don't put a halo in my head." I said, "The simple reason why they call me Sir, because it's much simpler than calling me Mr. Hooper."
And they respect you?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Same with headmaster. He used to come here, sit there, and put his feet up. He had a dog. He went, when he retired 2 years before me. And he was always Mr. Carr. Always Mr. Carr. No different. And I respected him. And he respected. And he sometimes would say, "Don't call me Mr. Carr, call me Vince." "No," I said, "so I'm sure you're the headmaster." I said, "You are still Mr. Carr." And he was Mr. Carr until the day I retired.
Nice, that discipline coming in about that you talked about at the very beginning.
It is, isn't it? Yes. And when I went out to see him, I rang the doorbell, and then his wife came to the door, Joyce. And I always called her Mrs. Carr. I said, "Hello, Mrs. Carr." "Hello, Mr. Hooper," she said. I said, "Is Vincent?" "Vince," she said. She shouted down the corridor, "Vince, Vince." She said, "Mr. Hooper's here," he said, "and he's called you Vince." Yeah, we used to go walking together, canoeing together, Dartmoor together, swimming together, sailing together.
Brilliant. Sounds like you've had a lovely life.
Not bad. Not bad. I can't go wrong, can I?
Thank you very much for talking to me. Very, very interesting.
You were. How much of that be gone? How much of that be rubbed out?
No, nothing. It doesn't get edited at all.
Doesn't it?
No, not at all. That's time for posterity now. Thank you.
Oh.